Hey, welcome back to the State of Maine podcast, and I'm excited to welcome our guest, David Moss, former Michigan hockey player, probably one of the first group of classes at the University of Michigan that I covered way back when I was with the Wolverine. I was, 22, 23 years old, straight out of Michigan. I think David Moss was probably just like a year or 2 years younger than me, and going through his career and all the fun that they had with Nystrom and Jason Risner and Milan Geisch and Eric Warner, and I'm saying all these names that I know, David. I mean, these are probably still your, some of your best friends.
Yep.
Welcome to the Standing Main podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, how long ago does it feel? Does those Michigan days for you? I mean, we're coming up, sadly, David, on like 20 years is not too far away here.
Yeah, it does. It, you know what, it feels like a lifetime, and also not that long ago. I think, like you mentioned, our class, we had 11 guys in our class, and still, are really good friends today. We still, in a non-COVID year, we usually go on a golf trip every summer. So yeah, still super close with those guys. But you start to realize how old you are when, our kids are, we all have kids now and multiple kids, and everyone's kind of grown up. And you come back to the University of Michigan, and there's new buildings, and you realize things aren't the way they used to be, and we're not young anymore.
Yeah, when's the last time you stepped foot in Yost Ice Arena? I'm curious. I mean, obviously it looks the same, but then there's also been a lot of dramatic, changes, updates, and things like that that they have added to the arena.
Yeah, I think let's see, I went to a game there last year with our kids. Probably it was in the beginning of the year when they were playing the USA team. I remember probably last year sometime. And so it's been a while, but the updates have been great. It's the facilities are top notch. With every time you go there, it seems like there's something new and that they've done. But Yost has still has that same charm, same atmosphere. But certainly they've put a lot of money into it, and it's become a great recruiting tool.
Well, I mean, way back when, what was that like to have been with that class? You just said like some great friends. I mean, you guys went to Frozen Fours. You were, always the best team or the second best team in the CCHA, always competing for championships. I mean, when you guys would not make the Frozen Four, that was a disappointing year. Red would get together afterwards and say like, well, we didn't get the, I don't want to say he would call it a failure of a season, but he'd be like, well, this was not, we didn't reach our goals. If you just didn't get to the Frozen Four, I mean, the expectations at the time were so incredibly sky high, and the culture that you guys were part of was winning was at the ultimate level was the only acceptable reality.
Yeah, you're right. I think so. Our first 2 years, our class, when we were freshmen and sophomores, we went to the Frozen Four those 2 years. Lost to Minnesota both times. The first year when we were freshmen, I think we were Minnesota was better. We didn't. I mean, I think that's no question. But the second year was tough when we lost in overtime to them. I think we had a really, really good, strong team that year. But then our junior and senior years, arguably, were probably the two best teams we had, when we had the younger guys like Hensick and Tambellini and some of these young, really talented players coming in. It was definitely disappointing. I think, our senior year, when we lost to Colorado College in the, to go to the Frozen Four, that hurt. We were good. We had a good team. We had a 3-0 lead in that game. I mean, still things you remember, 15 years later or whatever it was. But I definitely think about it, and still stings a little bit.
David, after you graduated from Michigan in 2005, you wanted to continue your hockey journey, and you played a couple years in the AHL, and you were a draft pick of the Calgary Flames, but you were a seventh rounder back in 2001. I mean, like, what were you thinking? Like, my professional career, like, did I have a really good chance at this? Because I would say a lot of people probably first rounders they're betting on, second rounders they're betting on. Seventh rounders are kind of like the guys who fill out the AHL roster a little bit. And yet here you would go on and have, I believe, a 9-year NHL career.
Yeah, I think obviously your goal is always to play in the NHL, but I think, like you said, statistically speaking, those late round draft picks probably aren't having long careers. And I think a goal of mine was I was going to sign a contract. I did a 2-year deal, and I was going to play for 2 years and see what happened. And I think in my mind, I wanted to try to play for 4 years to try to see if I could play in the NHL. And if I couldn't, had a degree from University of Michigan, hopefully could find a job. And that was kind of my goal. And I was fortunate enough to play a lot my first year in the American League and be given good opportunities. And I had a good season. And then the next year, fortunately Calgary had a lot of injuries and was able to get called up and get a chance. And that's kind of how it happened. But yeah, I think maybe I, the odds weren't in my favor, but I think Michigan prepared me definitely for pro hockey.
Well, and a little bit of an understatement. I mean, you spent 9 years in the NHL with two different franchises, the Flames and the Coyotes. And, it's your third year in the NHL. You scored 20 goals, 19 assists, have a career year, then became like a really important piece of the Calgary Flames team. And so, to kind of go from like a, hey, I want to make it, I want to prove to myself, and then become, one of the top performers on your team, that had a felt, I mean, I would say pretty damn amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And I think everything just kind of fell into place in Calgary. I was, had a general manager in Daryl Sutter who believed in me. And then, there was different coaches. I think I had three coaches when I was there. I had Jim Play for my first year. Then Mike Keenan came in, and then Brent Sutter. And every coach kind of, you got to earn their trust and all that stuff. But I think, the things at Michigan that I had going for him is I wasn't really a top line player. So I think when I got to the NHL, that role sort of, I didn't have to adapt. I just kind of kept playing the same way. I was able to kill penalties. I could play in a lot of different situations. And I think when you get to the NHL level, it's very hard to be a skill guy on teams, putting up tons of points. An easier way to stick around is to be a guy who can do a lot of little things, right? Kill penalties, play kind of on the third and fourth line. And if you have good enough skill, if there's injuries, you can kind of move up and down the lineup, which is what I ended up doing. And I think that sort of versatility is kind of a reason why I stuck around for as long as I did.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Dave, and certainly mentioning that, you weren't a first line player at Michigan. You were someone who had to kill penalties. You were on the power play, but you had to be a great defensive forward. And that's something that, especially as a centerman, Red used to always stress, was to play the full game, play the two-way game. And you look at a lot of these guys who have come out of Michigan. Now, Quinn Hughes is lighting the world on fire, and Dylan Larkin, the captain of the Detroit Red Wings, and Kyle Connor, I mean, certainly a great offensive player. But you look at a lot of the forwards that that Michigan has produced, and here locally in Detroit, Luke Glendening is a perfect example of someone who truly understood, I can make it in the NHL if I can give them a third line or a fourth line center that's going to do everything that they ask of me and chip in here and there some offensive opportunities. And so it's a credit to you, to the Michigan coaching staff, and to the program that they developed so many well-rounded players that were definitely an asset in the NHL.
Yeah. And I think, the hardest part is for coaches that, at the college level, to get players to understand that sometimes. I think everybody wants to be the guy putting up points and scoring goals. I think when you're, when you're recruited to come to Michigan, you were recruited from somewhere where you're probably, we're a high point producer or, a good player. And I think one of the hardest things, even at the college or the pro level, is making players understand that there's a lot more to the game, the higher you go, than just putting up points. And I think there's teams that are, they're made up of all different sorts of players, and you can't just, not every team's going to have, eight forwards or nine forwards who are on the power play. So you got to, if you're not one of those guys, you have to figure out a different role. And I think guys like Luke Glendening and even Eric Nystrom, who was a first rounder who I played with, he wasn't a first liner in the NHL. He was a third and fourth. He had a great career. I mean, he played 12 years or whatever he played for, and he found a role that, not many people are willing to do, especially a first rounder. Those guys are, they have it in their mind that they're supposed to be point guys and big contracts and all these things, where you can do it different ways. And I think there's, when player the earlier players realize that, the sometimes the better off it is. And I knew exactly what I was going to be going to pro hockey, and I think that helped.
Yeah, and what a nice career it was. And then I gotta imagine, here you are in year 7 of your career, and you transitioned from the Calgary Flames to the Phoenix Arizona Coyotes. What was that like for you and for your wife to go from? I mean, yeah, I'm sure Calgary is pretty in some ways, and certainly yeah. pretty in the summer. I don't know if you lived there year round or not, yeah. but then you go. Your winter was probably you pulled up and you wanted to be outside as short as possible. Go right from your car to the arena, back to the car, to your house. Yeah. And like, that was it. Versus like Arizona, here it is in February and it's 65 degrees, 70 degrees, 80 degrees. And then it's like the summer's the opposite. You're like, oh, I want to go from my house to the car, to the arena yeah. again.
Yeah. It was two different worlds for sure. Calgary was a great city. Obviously you have the mountains and, you know, Banff and some awesome tourist areas are not far away. But yeah, you know, frigid in the winter time, summer is very short, you know, going to Arizona where it's, you know, sunny, you know, pretty much 365 in the, you know, from October till April, the weather is just about perfect. Yeah, two different worlds, even in the hockey, world. Calgary was hockey crazy, where Arizona was a little bit more under the radar, and you know, there was not the same sort of, I guess, pressure from the standpoint of media and people around town and stuff. You were kind of, you could go play and you could go home and kind of leave hockey at the rink. And it was, yeah, two different worlds. You know, each had their pros and cons for different reasons, but yeah, was interesting.
Yeah, no, my mother and stepfather live in Scottsdale, Arizona. And, you know, and so I've experienced every season, time of the year, what they talk about, and just an entirely different world. So you're probably climbing mountains in Calgary that have snow at the top.
Yeah.
And in Arizona, you're still climbing mountains and they have cacti everywhere.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Different hikes for sure, but you know, both beautiful in their own respect.
So Dave, you retire from the NHL. You play 1 year in Switzerland. Did Ebbett, I mean, how did you kind of connect with that one? I know yeah. that Andrew has spent a lot of time there. We had him on my show a couple of months back.
Okay, yeah. So Ebbett was there before I went there. And I kind of, you know, I was trying to play one more year. I had a tryout and ended up in the American League with Milwaukee, which was where my wife was from. And we had a newborn child. So I was trying to stick there, and I just didn't make it, got cut. So I thought, you know, maybe this is the end of my career. Had an Ebby's agent in Europe kind of talk with him a little bit. He said they might have something coming up. I said, hey, if you ever have a chance, I'd love to go play there. Got a call like 2 days before Thanksgiving. They said, hey, if you want to come, you can fly out tomorrow. And I just said, okay, I'll take it. I went. Played in a town called Beale, which is about 30 minutes from Bern, which is where Andrew Ebbett played. So worked out well. We weren't on the same team, but we were able to see each other a lot, meet up for dinners and stuff like that. So it was a ton of fun and an experience that wouldn't trade for the world.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous. I mean, if I could live in Switzerland for a year, and especially if I was playing professional hockey and doing it, that'd be a nice lifestyle for a little bit. But yeah, kudos to you. Sounds like a great adventure. You came back to Michigan, and how soon into this did you transition from, you know, you kind of being like the focus to, you know, your wife getting into this franchise and maybe making that transition in life of like, okay, this is now my time to really support her and what she's trying to do.
Yeah. I think it, you know, it's people talk about all the time, but I think the hardest thing for athletes is to transition from, you know, you played pro hockey for 12 years, it's been your life. And then you, all of a sudden, you know, you're never ready to retire when you think you are, you know, you just get pulled one day, you're not good enough. And that's what happens. So I think when that happened, I was, you know, I knew we were starting a young family, and I didn't want to stay in the hockey world with coaching or player stuff like that. I just didn't, you know, it's too much travel and stuff. So I decided to take a job right when I was done in sales, did it for about a year. And during that time, all the while talking to my wife, and she was really interested in this franchise concept. And the more we talked about it, you know, the path we went down, you know, it started to come to fruition. And I, you know, we ended up jumping in 2 feet into the dry bar franchise world, and she started running those. So I took a step back and, you know, was hanging out with the kids a lot. And now I am an independent contractor and sell Adidas apparel. But yeah, so, you know, it was a transition because, you know, when you're running a business like she is, it's a full time. I mean, she was, yeah, you know, pretty busy for about 2 years there with running the shops and getting them going. So yeah, was, you know, I was kind of a Mr. Mom, Dad, stay at home dad for a little bit, and which was a lot of fun, but also a ton of work.
Dave, I have a little 1-year-old, and every once in a while, my wife's like, hey, can you schedule your day around it? We don't, you know, our nanny has to go to a meeting or go to the doctor's office, something like that. Can you take care of John? I'm like, yeah, I'm happy to babysit John. And she's like, no, he is your son. You don't yeah. babysit your own child, you know? Yeah. And so
yeah,
I get in a little bit of trouble if I ever use that term. And you've got 4 kids, so you're probably smart enough never to say, I'm going to babysit my own kids.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I don't know what you'd call it, but
it's called parenting, I guess.
Yeah, it's parenting. Yeah, it's all parenting, but yeah, it's one of those things I think you'll look back on. Like I say, you know, the days are long, but the years are fast. Mm-hmm.
So I know a couple other Michigan hockey players who have gone into their own business, and maybe this is just a generalization because I know I know some hockey players, and that's what they do. But it seems a little bit maybe more so than other sports that I've come across at Michigan. I wonder if there's anything, is it because, you know, Red was really stressing getting that degree, and so you're walking out of there and you're understanding, is a little bit because maybe you guys have enjoyed your independence and you don't yeah. want to go working for somebody. I mean, so now, you know, you do your own independent thing, but like, is there any common theme with Michigan hockey?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? I don't know. I think, I would say, I think there's some of it, it's kind of twofold. I think when you're playing hockey, I guess you do have a boss, but you're kind of running your own, you're investing yourself, right? All your training, everything you're doing, you know, then when you're done, I think the appeal of owning your own business or running something yourself, has that. And I think the work ethic is definitely inside of you. You want to work, you've done it your whole life. And if you're going to work extremely hard and you're going to, you know, bust your butt doing a bunch of stuff, you might as well try to own your own business and, you know, do that. So I think that was our, you know, it wasn't tough to work for somebody else, but I think when you're, you know, if you're going to, for my wife and I said, if we're going to take 15, 20 years and really, really, you know, step on it and work hard here, let's do some for ourselves and, you know, just invest in ourselves. And I guess you're betting on yourself. And, you know, that's kind of been what we've done. And, you know, it's been, there's a lot of challenges, but it's really rewarding at the end of the day.
So your wife has 2 locations, 2 dry bar locations in Ann Arbor and Birmingham. And for those out there who are kind of curious, what's the 411? What's the skinny on a dry bar?
Yeah, so a dry bar is it's a women's blowout bar. So it's a place you go to get your hair washed, dried, and styled. So it's pretty big for, you know, events, for working moms, for sororities, for, I mean, anything that's event driven and or a ton of women in business who don't have time to do their own hair. That's what the business model is. And you know, it's an affordable luxury. You know, you can, you know, they have memberships and you can, you're in and out. So you're in and out fast. So 45 minutes, get your hair done and out the door.
All right. Well, that sounds really cool. And you can certainly learn much more about it at the 2 locations. But Dave, I want to ask you too about Michigan hockey. You said that you've been able to watch more games than previously. And the good thing is that even though we're not allowed inside the arena, both Big Ten Network, I know that NBC Sports carried some of the Notre Dame series last weekend, that there have been opportunities to watch some of the games. And this is a Michigan hockey team that is just coming off winning 4 in a row. They're up to number 7 in the country. What have you seen out of them as they've grown up this year? Because I think that's really the term I would use is growing up this year, to get to a point where here they are. Now they've got to miss a couple of games against Penn State, February 3rd and 4th because of the 2-week pause. But yeah, what do you like about this team right now?
You know, I just like the games that I've seen. They're super skilled, fun to watch. I think, you know, you watch them the way they play. They play a fast game and they make plays. And, you know, like you said, they have a lot of young players. But and I think, you know, with that, you're going to see, you know, maybe some growing pains. But they're so talented and so skilled that, you know, they just make plays and make things happen. And, you know, when I do watch the games, you know, I usually have some kids with me. Two of our older boys love watching hockey, too. And it, you know, they say, oh, man, these guys are, you know, super fast. And yeah, they make plays at high speed and they're fun to watch. And I think that just is, you know, something that is as a year goes on, as these young players mature, they're only going to get better.
You know, what you were just saying, what you're just talking about there, the young guys mature. So I was talking to Nico Pericos and Tony Calderon, a couple of guys who just graduated a few years ago. And I get asked this all the time when I do radio interviews, because I'm viewed as a little bit of a hockey expert for Michigan, having covered them for 15, 16 years, is how does Michigan, this seems to like a trend that happens year after year after year, end up playing or going on a streak and playing their best hockey in January, February, and going into the postseason? Like, is there a, what is the culture? What is the mindset? How does that seem to happen year after year after year?
Yeah. You know what? I think it's obviously with Red, I think there's a certain amount of, with the Michigan program, there's a certain amount of just doing things a certain way, you know, the right way. And I think when you have, like we talked about earlier, when you have a bunch of different individual, really, really talented players, sometimes it's hard to get everybody playing a certain way. Sometimes it's not the way you want to play. Sometimes it's doing things you don't want to do. But I think once everyone sort of takes hold of that and gels, that's when you start playing your best hockey. And sometimes that could take, you know, a few months, especially when you have turnover every year and new players coming in and new faces. And I think that's why, you know, when you have a really strong leadership, sometimes that's easier to do. But when you have, you know, a big freshman class, it's sometimes that's hard and it takes time.
Dave, in their four-game winning streak here, 17 goals scored, 4 goals given up. As a former hockey player, which one brings more joy to you when you think about it? The high scoring or the really good defense?
I don't know. I think, you know, scoring goals is great. I would say, whatever it takes to win is great. But I do think that as a coach, probably you take more pride in giving up less goals for sure. I think scoring a lot of goals is great, but I think when you get sort of playoff time, crunch time, sometimes that the goals can dry up. And if the goals dry up and you're still playing good defensively, you still have a chance to win. So I think, you know, from a coaching perspective, I think they're probably happy to see their goals go down. You know, and it's funny how it works. Sometimes when you're playing really good defense, you know, it leads to more offensive opportunities, and that's kind of what you're seeing.
You know, what's incredible about this team, and you mentioned the youth, you know, they have some upperclassmen, some key veterans like Nick Blankenberg, a junior defenseman, and Michael Pasichoff, who's a senior forward for Michigan. Nolan Moyle and Garrett Van Wy are part of a team that are part of a line with Dakota Robbie. Of upperclassmen. I don't know. Now, I have covered Michigan hockey since the 2002-2003 season in some capacity. I don't know in all that time, Dave, that I could say this, the top 5 scorers on Michigan right now are all freshmen.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible. I don't know if that's been done. I know, obviously I've played with a lot of great freshman, but yeah, that's a, you know, a testament to good recruiting and, you know, really, really good young players wanting to come to Michigan. And, it's a good sign for the future.
Certainly is a good sign for future. As we talked about before this podcast, well, hopefully they can keep, you know, you look at them, Kent Johnson, Thomas Bortolo, Maddie Beniers, Brendan Brisson, and Owen Power, all freshmen. If you can get all 5 of them come back for their sophomore year, That's going to be pretty awesome for Michigan. If you can get three out of the five of them to come back for their junior year, Mel Pearson would take that as a huge win for the program. But Dave, we were talking a little bit about, so right now Michigan's in this 2-week pause and they're playing their best hockey. And, you know, this is secondhand information. It was relayed to me from someone who interviewed Mel Pearson and said, you know, Mel has said, look, guys can get together. They can go for runs. We've told our guys they've got to work out on their own. They're not supposed to be they can't come to Yost. So they can't skate and they can't, you know, use the weight room. I guess in theory, they could probably go over to the Ann Arbor Ice Cube or something like that and jump on the ice and skate around. But let me ask you this question, because the 2-week pause, if it goes according to plan, ends on February 7th. Michigan's supposed to play a couple of days later against Michigan State. Is that fair to ask them? How long does it take to get your hockey legs back? I mean, you can run all you want. There's a difference between running and skating and getting this team ready. Would they be better off trying to push it, you know, push 1 week of conditioning and practicing?
Yeah, I think it's extremely tough to take 2 weeks off. It's been, you know, in the middle of the season, it's hard. I mean, like you said, you can do anything you want, but skating and playing games is a lot different than, you know, working out in the gym. And I think it's extremely difficult to, you know, to hop right back into it full speed, you know, after being off 2 weeks to hop back into a game. I think the potential for injury is definitely there. I would say probably easier to you know, at least get a few, you know, a handful of practices in and some, you know, you're going to have to be, you know, you're not used to battling and all that stuff. And I would say it's going to be difficult. And if they could have a little bit more time in to have a few more practices and some contact before going full tilt, I think that would be beneficial.
Yeah, it's incredible. If the pause is lifted on February 7th, Michigan is right now scheduled to have a game February 9th against Michigan State. I just think that's asking too much for them to jump back on the ice. But I will say this. How often in your career have you had a coach tell you, like, okay, guys, keep the shift short. We don't want to get exposed. We don't want anybody to be tired. This might be the one time where if you said, keep the shift short, you have no complaints from any of the forwards who want to get off the ice in about 35 to 40 seconds.
Yeah, they're going to be, they'll be sucking a wind for sure. If they're playing those games 2 days after being off 2 weeks, there's no question about it.
Dave, before we let you go here, I'm certainly excited about hockey. But you know, you're a big Michigan guy. How much do you pay attention to the other sports teams, the basketball teams or the football team, to what else is going on at the university?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, a ton. You know, we're a football team where, you know, we try to get to at least a few games a year, you know, watch them when they're on, you know, we follow, you know, pretty much every sport or, you know, anything that's going on in Michigan, we follow. I mean, our kids are already brainwashed, you know, they can sing the fight song and do every, you know, go to Yost and take them to the Big House. So yeah, no, follow it huge. I mean, Michigan is a huge part of my life and, you know, now our kids' lives, bringing them up with the traditions and, you know, seeing a campus and stuff. So no, it's in my blood.
So your wife's from Milwaukee, so she's not a Badger?
She's not really a Badger. She's more of a Packers nut. So we let the kids kind of have their Packers, you know, fandom, but college-wise, they're all Michigan.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Dave, thanks very much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. And good luck to the business here as things start to open up again. And as you said, I mean, you know, those events are going to come back. You know, I know quite a few people who delayed their wedding from last summer to this upcoming summer. We're all looking forward to getting back, and I'm sure the business will pick up really quickly here as more and more things open up.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Michael. Appreciate it.